ومن جانت من المسيح من عند شلاك تكشير النيلي تامين تسمى الشيء الذي
Oh, great personality counsel. Only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily concept of life, lacking self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine and this belongs to another. Report. Everything is done automatically by the laws of nature, which work under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no question of doing anything independently, for one who has put himself in this material atmosphere is fully under the control of nature's laws. Our main business, therefore, should be to get out from this conditioned life and again become situated in spiritual existence. Only due to ignorance does a person think, I am a demigod, I am a human being, I am a dog, I am a cat. Or, when the ignorance is still further advanced, I am God. Unless one is fully self-realized, one's life of ignorance will continue. In the purport, Prabhupada is discussing the point that I've spoken at some length yesterday. If you read the purport carefully, if you hear carefully, you'll see there appears to be a contradiction. Did anyone pick up on that? You'd have to be listening very carefully. Some apparent contradiction in the purport. Prabhupada writes that there is no question of doing anything independently, for one who has put himself in this material atmosphere is fully under the control of nature's laws. Then Prabhupada says, our main business, therefore, should be to get out of this conditioned life and again become situated in spiritual existence. But if you're fully under the control of material laws, you may ask, well, how can you get out? If you have no choice in what you're doing, then how are you going to get liberated? Sometimes people, they think, let me see an astrologer and I'll have my palm read and say, will I be liberated in this life? But actually you can't tell. There may be an indication. But because liberation means to get free from the laws of material nature, you can't, by the laws of material nature, judge that. There may be indications. There may be indications that this person has got a strong spiritual interest, which according to the indications appear will continue throughout his life. But it's not destined that one is going to be liberated or not. Even one may appear to have a very good chance of liberation. Everything may be favorable, but he can spoil his chance also by making offenses. What brings us to the spiritual position is chanting Hare Krishna, engaging in devotional service of Krishna. Namchi Yogi Abhicharina Bhakti Yogi Nisevati Sagunan Samatityaitan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. One is under the control of the three modes of material nature, but when he takes a devotional service, he becomes free from them. But then again, if in the course of performing devotional service, one commits offenses, then specifically offenses to Vaishnavas, very serious offenses in deity worship, nama parada, but most serious of all is Vaishnava parada, then that advance from the made again is stopped. So even you may be able to see there's some apparent advancement is there, but the ways of nature are very complex and subtle. Karma no hyapi bodhavyam, bodhavyam chavi karma no. Akarma nasti bodhavyam, gahana karma no gatihi. Krishna says it's very difficult to understand what is the way of karma, vikarma, akarma. Exactly how the laws of nature are acting upon us. Even the most expert astrologer can't tell you everything. He can give some indication. So, because ultimately we have our own independence to choose this way or that way. Now, that appears to be contradictory to what Prabhupada is saying here, that everyone is under the control of material nature's laws. Then, if that is absolutely true under all circumstances, then the next statement that our business is to get free, there'd be no meaning to such a statement, because if we have no choice whatsoever, then there's no chance to choose to act in such a way that we may be liberated. So I was discussing this yesterday, that destiny is very powerful. Therefore Krishna says in Gita, Prakrite kriya mana ni gunai kamani savashaha ahankara vibhudharma karta ameti manite. The person under the influence of material nature thinks that I'm the doer, but actually he's controlled. But then again, Krishna says in Gita, what was the next verse I quoted yesterday to offset that? Who's a good scholar of Gita and remembers what I was saying? There's another verse later on which qualifies this in the 13th chapter. Karya karanda katritve hetu prakriti ruchite purusha sukadukanam bhuktritve hetu ruchite. It's a very important verse which says that our situation in the material world is arranged by the modes of material nature. But the ultimate cause of the suffering and distress of the living entity of the material world is his own self. Because of purusha abhiman, because of thinking of himself as the enjoyer. He thinks this situation will be good for my enjoyment, that will not. This situation will be good for my suffering, that will cause my suffering, therefore I should try to avoid it. This comes from purusha abhiman, which the identification of oneself as the body for the sake of its material sense enjoyment, as is stated here in this verse. Vasudeva is speaking to Kamsa that this kind of thinking, that I am this body, I am a human being, I should try to enjoy it, that is the cause of our suffering or enjoyment. It may also be the cause of our enjoyment. If we think, let me enjoy this material world, we may also do so by performing pious activities and getting some pious result. But actually, of course, those who are transcendentalists, they understand that the enjoyment of this material world is not enjoyment anyway. Even the so-called enjoyment is not enjoyment. But the choice is there also. Choice, I'll repeat it because it's important, we should try to understand it. Same thing yesterday. That choice comes, first of all, when we have knowledge. Otherwise there's no question of choice. If you don't know anything else, how are you going to choose? Just like the Christians say, at least they used to say, I don't know if they changed their philosophy in the meantime, that's also possible. But I was brought up to hear that if you don't believe in Jesus, you go to hell forever. So then I later thought, well, what about someone, for instance, who's born in Thailand, in a Buddhist culture, and never comes in contact with Christianity, or even if he does, he's so much inculcated Buddhism that he has no inclination whatsoever towards it. This means that God's not fair. He likes the Americans better than the Thais because Christianity is preached in America. So they can live happily with Jesus forever, and the Thais, the Buddhists, have to go to hell. Well, why is that? If they don't even hear about it. So this doesn't make any sense. It's not simply that, to say that you simply believe in Jesus or you believe in something that will deliver you. No. Yeah. Believing means not simply saying, not simply to put your hand on your heart and say, I believe in Jesus, but you have to act as he instructs. If you believe in him, you believe in what he says, and you should follow it. If it's just simply a man, of course Jesus may have said, you believe in me, but then why did he give so many instructions? It wasn't just a matter of repeating a slogan. If you believe in him, that means you believe in his instructions, and you follow them. He gave so many instructions, what is right and what is wrong. How to act so to be elevated, how to avoid being degraded. So, really the opportunity for choice or the opportunity for liberation comes when we have knowledge. That's why those who are, even in the human body, those who are very much covered by ignorance and passion, then practically they're almost like animals because they have no choice in what they do. They're simply, whatever is dictated, buy this toothpaste or drink the culture says, according to cultural norms, you should drink beer or whatever it is, they do it. They don't think about it very deeply. Therefore, Brahma Sutra says, Atato Brahma Jignasa, now you should inquire into the absolute truth. Don't simply be carried away by the waves, guna pravaha, by the waves of material nature. Now you have to start thinking. That is the prerogative and the imperative of human life. The prerogative and imperative means you have the opportunity, and you should take that opportunity, because if you don't take the opportunity to be elevated, then you're going to be degraded. But if you take the opportunity to be elevated by taking spiritual knowledge, then there is the possibility of elevation. That means coming to the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, one can begin to hear the message of Godhead, the message of transcendence. As long as one is in the modes of passion and ignorance, He can't even hear this message. Sometimes we are asked about preaching to different kinds of people. You were asking last night how to preach to this kind of person, that kind of person. But many people, they can't hear what you say. They're not capable of hearing because they're covered by the lower modes of material nature so much that they can't begin to hear. Therefore, for most people, take some prasad, come to the temple, take darshan, chant Hare Krishna, take a book, give some money, do some service, in this way become purified so that you can begin to hear. And those who can advance very nicely are those who can hear very nicely. Prabhupada, he often stated that his qualification was that he liked to hear his guru and he liked to serve him. Prabhupada said, because I was good in hearing, therefore he was good in shravana, therefore I'm good in kirtan, good in speaking. So one who comes to the mode of goodness, sadvam sanjayate jnanam, from the mode of goodness, knowledge develops. When that word is there, sanjayate means to develop. Of course, it's not exactly that it just organically or spontaneously develops. So there's a process for developing that. First of all, one should be situated in the mode of goodness by following principles, regulated principles of freedom. These are called the regulated principles of freedom. Why? Because why you say regulated principles of freedom? It seems that if you're following principles, that your freedom is obstructed. But actually, by following these principles, it frees us from the lower modes of nature and their influence, by which we can act so that we can be elevated and we can be freed completely from the modes of material nature, including the mode of goodness, which is also ultimately the mode of goodness. If we don't come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, that can also be a contamination, because even in the mode of goodness, any mode of nature doesn't stand alone. So even if we're very much in the mode of goodness, the influence of the lower modes may lead us to be proud of that, or complacent, or content simply with being good. So even goodness one has to transcend to come to the platform of Shuddha Sattva, or the platform of Vasudeva. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shantitam. This Vasudeva means he who is born from Vasudeva. That's one meaning. The other meaning is all pervading. Vishnu, same as the name Vishnu. Vasudeva means he who has his Vas, his residence everywhere. So, another meaning is Sattvam Vishuddham. When one comes to the platform of absolutely pure goodness, that means with no tinge of the modes of nature, that is the Vasudeva, to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. So that the possibility of getting free from the modes of material nature begins when one begins to cultivate the modes of goodness. Now, sometimes we hear that someone is described as being in the mode of goodness because they're very clean, or they follow regulated principles and so many things. So in one sense, that may be the mode of goodness, but really the mode of goodness begins when one starts to, these are prerequisites for the modes of goodness. Rising early, keeping clean, taking baths regularly, having clean clothes, not taking intoxicated, all these things. These are prerequisites for the mode of goodness. But the mode of goodness actually begins when we start to hear spiritual knowledge from a self-realized person. Otherwise, we see many cases of people whose habits or lifestyle is in the mode of goodness, but their philosophical understanding is in the mode of ignorance. Yesterday we were discussing about James, whose lifestyle, at least those who are still following it, is very pure, very strictly vegetarian, at least previous generations, or the next generation may not be so much, but very strictly vegetarian, and they don't perform activities which they think may cause any violence or harm to others, and no intoxication, all these things. Of course, they may be drinking tea and coffee, but basically, we'd say their lifestyle is in the mode of goodness. But their philosophy is absolutely demonic. That this idea of voidism, everything is nothing, and specifically, they accept, as Buddhism, of course, is very similar. Buddhism, Jainism, they're both forms of voidism. So, as Buddhism does, they accept many of the tenets of Vedic instruction, for instance, that there are laws of karma, there are hells that you go to if you perform sinful activities. So because they haven't heard from the right source, they also accept the existence of Krishna, but they say because Krishna is sinful, he's in hell. See, Krishna did so many immoral things, so now he's suffering in hell. And they've come to the conclusion. So absolutely in the mode of ignorance, demoniac philosophy. But their lifestyle is very pure and good. So that's not actually good. That's not actually goodness. Goodness really begins when you begin to hear from a proper bona fide source and follow those instructions. Simply leading a pure lifestyle, that's not it. Prabhupada used to quote, that sometimes people are very proud, I'm a vegetarian. Prabhupada would point out, even the monkeys are vegetarians. It doesn't mean they're spiritually advanced. The monkey's a vegetarian. He lives in the forest without any clothes. If a sadhu lives in the forest without any clothes and only eats fruits and roots, he'd be considered highly advanced just by doing that. But that doesn't mean he's highly advanced, because even the monkey is doing that. What is his standard of knowledge that we have to see? Of course, behavior is also an indication of one's advancement. Generally, we think of a saintly person as being peaceful and self-controlled and so many things. So even if someone has the right, he has a correct philosophical understanding, but if he's proud or angry or these different things, then of course, it's not that even a great deal to be proud and angry, but if one is constitutionally, apparently like this, then we can understand that even though he may have be favored with some proper philosophical understanding, he hasn't had much realization of it. He hasn't come to the proper platform of behavior, still influenced by the lower modes of material nature. So that may be there even in practicing Krishna consciousness. The lower modes of material nature, the passion and ignorance, that means demoniac life. Just here we're discussing Kamsa and Devaki, the Kamsa Devaki Vasudeva. So they're as different as any people can be different. Because Kamsa is a demon. Famous demon. He's not only a demon, he's a famous demon. There are many demons, but he's a famous demon because he's a great demon. And Vasudeva and Devaki, they are great devotees. There are many devotees, but Vasudeva and Devaki are famous because they're very great devotees. So they're at the opposite ends of the spectrum, even though at the present time, they're talking together very cordially, and they're agreeing that destiny is very strong, or they're having some philosophical agreement, or some interaction is there between them, which at the present time isn't bitter. But they're as different as two people can be. They're both in the same situation, they're more or less the same age, they're from the same family, the same caste, they're both living in Mathura, they're both at the time of Krishna's appearance, but they have a completely different attitude. Kamsa wants to kill Krishna. Vasudeva wants to keep Krishna alive by any means. He's a great devotee because he's prepared to sacrifice for Krishna, even at the risk of losing his name, good morality. See that Krishna, Kamsa, he was promised by Vasudeva when Kamsa wanted to kill Devaki. Kamsa wanted to kill Devaki, but Vasudeva said, no, why kill her? She's not going to kill you. The prophecy is that her eighth child will kill you. So if you like, if you want, I'll deliver all my children to you. I'll give them all to you. So you can do what you like with them. He promised that as a diplomatic tactic to keep Devaki alive. So Kamsa had such faith in Vasudeva that he's such a truthful person that even though Kamsa himself was a demon, he had full faith in Vasudeva's words because Vasudeva was such a truthful person of honor. But Vasudeva, when it came to the eighth child, Krishna, he cheated. He broke his word of honor, even though he was famous as he was so famous, so respected as a truthful person, that even Kamsa, who was such a big demon, didn't trust anybody, practically, he trusted Vasudeva. But Vasudeva broke his promise for the sake of protecting Krishna. This is the sign of a great devotee. That even his own reputation or even worldly morality he can transgress that for the service of Krishna. Even his see, Vasudeva had such a great reputation that he was prepared to sacrifice them, to do some cheating for the sake of Krishna. So this is the difference, Vasudeva and Kamsa, the difference in outlook. One wants to kill Krishna, the other wants to protect Krishna by all means. Even though Vasudeva, you see, he already knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. He's the protector of everybody because he appeared in Chaturbhuj Murti, four hands. So in those four hands, there are, among other things, Gada and Chakra. With his chakra, anyway, the Sudarshan Chakra destroys the whole creation, what to speak of one demon called Kamsa. And with the club, it's also either the chakra or the club, either Krishna can kill any number of demons. What's the name of Krishna's club? Anyone can remember? We have Sudarshan Chakra and what's the name of Krishna's Gada?
Komadaki.
Yes. In third canto of Bhagavatam, it's described how the yogi meditates on the form of the Lord and the club is covered with the blood of the demons. So it's not just held as a kind of insignia. Sometimes you see, just like on Independence Day in Delhi, they have all the soldiers marching. Or in London, it's famous. They have the soldiers are all dressed up in a rather impractical bright red uniform and a big hat. What's that called? A Busby hat or something like that. So that's just some royal regalia. But Krishna's club is not like this. He uses it. Smashes the demons. So Krishna is quite competent to protect himself, but by the action of Yoga Maya, Vasudeva is thinking, oh, what about Krishna? Now Kamsa, he's so powerful, he's a little baby, how to protect him? And this is the difference between the devotee and the demon. Both of them at the present time, they're having the same philosophical realization, although actually, of course, Vasudeva's philosophical realization of the nature of providence is much stronger than that of Kamsa's, because Kamsa is always trying to change his providence by his own activities. That is the foolishness. Ahankara vimudhat mahakartamiti manyate. A foolish demon thinks, I can change everything by my own activity. Sometimes we hear great demons like Hiranyakashipu, they want to stop the natural flow of the laws of the universe. They want to stop sacrifices which bring in auspiciousness, or they want the results of the sacrifice offered to themselves. Hiranyakashipu, Vena Maharaj, the same thing he wanted to do. They think that they by their own strength they can transgress the laws of nature. What they don't realize is that they get strength from nature. It's not their own personal strength. This is their foolishness, because they're thinking, I am God, then the power that I have is self-manifest. Krishna, he is Swarat, he is independent, means what power he has is self-manifest, it's intrinsic to his nature. But the jivas, what power they have is not intrinsic to them, but it is given by Krishna. Purusham Rishu, Krishna says, I am the ability in man. It's not your power, it's Krishna's power that he gives to you. He may give you more, he may give you less through the agency of material nature. So a very great demon like Hiranyakashipu, he has a lot of power compared to other jivas, not compared to Krishna. But because he's in the illusion, I am the enjoyer, he's thinking, I am God, this is my own power. I got it by my own austerities. Now I have this power. No one can stop me. Nothing. No one can do anything to me. That is his foolishness. Because Krishna gives and Krishna takes away. Krishna can take away all your power in one instant. And it happens again and again. Hiranyakashipu was a great, powerful demon in charge of the universe. But a few minutes later, after the appearance of Nrisimhadeva, he was absolutely finished. All power gone. You have to leave the body which you were so much attached to. You have to leave it. He had no power, for all his power to control others, he had no power to resist Nrisimhadeva. The same thing with Kamsa or any demon. Very powerful. So powerful, even the demigods were afraid of him. But when Krishna came, he was finished immediately. Because Krishna had given him that power, and when Krishna wanted, Krishna withdrew that power. This is the foolishness of the materialists. They think, I am doing. But they don't realize that they are only apparently doing because material nature is providing the power. You yourself are not independently powerful. So when one begins to hear this, then his chance to, his opportunity to exercise his choice to act as a false enjoyer of this material world or to act as the servant of Krishna, then he has the opportunity to exercise that choice. And then he started to become freed from the influence of the modes of material nature. The influence of the modes of material nature goes on as long as we try to surf the waves of material nature to enjoy it. But when we take shelter of the boat of Krishna consciousness, then we come out of the water. Otherwise, as long as we're in the water, we may think, I'm enjoying the waves of material nature. But actually, what is it? It's kachu habuduruga. We're simply this coming up, breathing some air, thinking this is very nice, and then going under the water again. Means we're constantly in a state of struggling to survive. And when we come up above the water and breathe a little air, we think it's very nice. And then again, we're pushed under the water. So like that, sometimes you may be in Swarga Loka, we may think I'm enjoying. Then again, we're sent to hell and we're suffering. We may be very rich or powerful or learned or whatever. Then again, our happy situation, so-called, is destroyed. This is the way of material nature. You can't avoid it. We may think by our plans we will make such a situation in which I will be happy forever, but it's not possible. Therefore, an intelligent person, hearing of this philosophy, what is our actual existential position in this world, then he decides, he makes the decision to act in such a way that he will no longer be influenced by the modes of material nature. That means he takes up sadhana, the process of Krishna consciousness, by which he can be freed from ignorance. The cause of bondage in this material world is ignorance. Because we're identified with this material body, we want to enjoy it, but we can't enjoy it. It's not possible. We can only suffer. Even if we think we're enjoying it, it's not enjoying, it's only suffering. So a demon-like Kamsa, even though he is in a position of power, opulence, prestige, he can only suffer. Whereas Vasudeva and Devaki, even though humiliated, Vasudeva is supposed to be a Kshatriya, but he's a prisoner of someone else. He's humiliated, he's in the control of a big demon, his life can be taken away at any time, but he's always enjoying transcendental bliss. Jato deko vaishnava vyavaharatu tadaiva jane hote ho paranand shuk. This Vrindavan Das Thakur is describing pastimes of Haridas Thakur, who was beaten in 22 marketplaces. So one may think, well, that's not very nice. That's a lot of suffering. But Vrindavan Das explains that if you see a Vaishnava apparently suffering, you should understand that is transcendental bliss. Because a devotee, a pure devotee, always lives on the transcendental platform. Satvang Vishudam Vasudeva Shaktam. He's always on the spiritual platform, although he may be apparently suffering. So Vasudeva has made his choice to serve Krishna, to surrender to Krishna. And by doing that, he is eternally liberated and eternally happy. And Kamsa, despite tremendous endeavor on his part, cannot be happy because he made the wrong choice not to surrender to Krishna. So this Bhagavad discourse we are having to enlighten us with these facts. Tattva-jnana. What is the actual position? So that we ourselves will make the choice following in the footsteps of Vasudeva and Devaki. Vasudeva here calls Kamsa Mahabhaga, great personality. He's great, but he's not the, his is not the kind of greatness that we want to emulate. He's a great fool, a great demon. Rather, one should follow in the footsteps of the Mahatmas, those who are great personalities by spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Is there any question?
prediction.
Hmm.
So the conclusion is non-trivial, which we are feeling about.
The apparent contradiction that we're under the modes of material nature, yet we should act in such a way to get free from them, is that the statement that we're completely under the control of certain modes of material nature is not an absolute fact for everyone under all circumstances. Those who are under the lower modes of material nature who are completely deluded. Those who think I am the doer, they are completely deluded. That verse says, Prakriti Kriya Manani Gunaikar Mani Sarvasha Ahankara Mitya. What is it? Vimudhatma. Ahankara Vimudhatma Katha Amiti Manite. Those who think I am the doer, they're not the doer, they're bewildered because they're under the control of material nature. But those who not see the hand of Krishna in everything, who don't think I am the doer, those who recognize the influence of the modes of material nature on them and start to get free from it by surrendering to Krishna. How does it work? How does preaching work? If someone's in the lower modes of material nature, they can't hear. How does preaching work? Well, that I said, that we give them a book, and they can give some service by giving some donation. Just by seeing the devotee, they can think of Krishna. And then you may say, well, why speak to people at all if they're not ready to hear? Well, in some cases, there isn't much use of speaking. But even then you can speak with the understanding that even though such people, from the material point of view, there's no point of picking them up. But we're not just acting on the material platform. We're working, a preacher of Krishna conscious is carrying the mercy of Krishna. So when Krishna sees the sincere desire of the devotee to deliver the conditioned soul, then Krishna within the heart, Srimatam Srakata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, Vidantya Sraya Badami, Vidunoti Sutam. Those who hear the message of Krishna, their heart is cleansed by Krishna. So one who begins to hear some way or other from a devotee, if there's a spark of submissiveness in them, then they begin to be purified by Krishna's grace. And Krishna bestows his grace, especially when the devotees, by their sincere desire, go to spread Krishna's grace. So, Krishna himself, he says, Tanaham Vrishitakravan Sansaresha Naradavam Shikyamya Jasana Shivan Sansa. What is the last line? I always forget that. It says that those who are demons, they simply go down to hell. So that's the ordinary arrangement. That those who are demoniac, they go down to hell. That is the way of the material world. But that arrangement is going on. That is Krishna's arrangement. But Krishna, out of his mercy, sends his devotees to change the law, to interfere with the whole system. The ordinary materialistic system means everyone is doomed, everyone's going to hell. But the devotees, they come and they give the transcendental messages of Krishna. They bring the message of Krishna by which others can be purified and lifted up from the cycle of birth and death. So that is the factor, the transcendental factor. Now those who are non-devotees, they don't accept the transcendental factor. Nevertheless, they will act on it. Therefore we say, give prasad. Definitely works, has its effect. Chant Hare Krishna. Give the books. It will have its effect. And that we're seeing. There's the ordinary platform of activities and there's the extraordinary. That's called lokik alokik. Lokik means ordinary. Lokik means extraordinary. Lokik means the ordinary course of this world. Loka, lokik. And alokik, prakriti, means material. But the devotees, their activities are aprakriti. They're not material. So they act on the soul, which is aprakriti. The soul is covered by layers of ignorance. Prakriti. Prakriti kriyamanani. We're working under the influence of jara prakriti. In material nature. But the devotee's message is aprakriti. Pierces through the levels of ignorance covering the soul. And soul to soul, one's actually preaching, then he's soul to soul, just like we have mouth to mouth resuscitation for a person who's dying for lack of air, drowning in the waters. Mouth to mouth resuscitation. So a devotee is preaching his soul to soul resuscitation. That requires some purity also. That also requires some desire to uplift the person. Preaching doesn't mean just defeating in arguments, showing how wonderful you are. That can also be one kind of maya. Krishna doesn't respond to such a preacher.
Sometimes you're coming to people, they deem, especially women, they're very religious. They are understanding, just like what you say, they're acting in the modus of goodness. I mean, us in the modus of goodness.
Yeah.
They're understanding of religious people.
Yeah, yeah.
So they start to speak practically.
I am a Hindu and I know everything.
They wanted to show
you are coming from the West, you should learn from me. If someone has an attitude, how are you going to... You can't teach someone who's not willing to hear.
So what is the question? What actually am I doing in this situation? Are you saying, okay, yes, yes? I said, yes, you're correct. Gradually, they become satisfied.
Right.
Then our people will go.
This is the process of preaching.
But the question
that,
is...
That Prabhupada, he used to quote, when how to preach. Prabhupada used to quote this, Dandhenidhaya Chunakam, that verse from Prabodhananda Saraswati, that you go to a person who's very proud, with a straw in your mouth, and say, my dear sir, you're very wonderful, you're very great, and then he starts to think, well, this is an intelligent person, well, what do you want? He says, give up all your nonsense ideas and surrender to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So first you have to get his attention, maybe by flattery or whatever, then you deliver the message.
That's the point that when I teach these people, I'm not saying straight,
you're not Krishna speaking to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Yes. Neither you're Krishna there, nor are they Arjuna. Give the book, by hook or by crook, give the book. It will have its effect. Yes, for distributing books. You've been distributing books so many years. Why do you have to ask this question?
No,
you don't need to. Distributing the book, you say what's required to distribute it.
The question has come to the point that we have to teach them to bring them from the influence of force of nature. So if we are just like flattering them, then they get the book, but then they don't get the impulse
the thing is, if they're so puffed up and foolish, somehow you give them the book. That's the beginning for them. Later we can consider how to get them to read. That means we have to have festivals, make some impact, so by which they may be inclined to think that these books are worth reading. Another thing is that they may be very puffed up at this moment, but then later on there may be some difficulties in their life by which they become depressed and they realize I'm not in control of everything. And at that time there are many cases of people who somehow they get the book but they're not interested, but later their life situation changes because the books act. Another thing is they may not take interest, but their children may, or someone else may. I know the first time I saw Prabhupada's books, someone wanted to show me, I said, don't show me, I'm not interested. I know all these Indian gurus, I know they're all cheats, I don't have anything to do with it. And 2 years later, I was in someone's house, they had Prabhupada's book. They hadn't read it, they weren't interested, I read it. And then I came to the temple, and then, that's it. And it's allowed to join the temple. So don't... Sometimes we hear, oh, no one's reading our books. So don't think like this. You don't know how many people are reading our books. I've said this many times, I'll say it again, that when I first came to India, which is 23 years ago now, it's very difficult preaching because everyone was like this. I'm a Hindu and I know everything. I used to hear that a dozen times a day. I'm a Hindu and I know everything. You should learn from me. Someone even they'll say with a cigarette in their mouth. But nowadays we find much more that people are willing to listen to what we have to say. Another thing that the impersonalism was so thick, Prabhupada said, everyone in India is an impersonalist. He said, every Hindu, you just scratch a little bit, even if they're apparently a devotee, you'll find Mayavad. But that's changed. Nowadays, it's not like that so much, although Mayavad is still very strong, but there are many people who from the beginning, when you preach to them, they can understand that impersonalism is rubbish. Here in India, things have changed. How? Because of distribution of Prabhupada's books. That's the I can't find any other explanation for this. That people, the effect of the philosophy being given in Prabhupada's books is being felt. So all these things, that people don't read it. It's just the trick of Maya to take away your enthusiasm for distributing books. You should distribute more books. Distribute sets, give Bhagavatams, big bomb. There's good scope here. You should distribute lots of Bhagavatams. That means cultivating people a bit. But if you give that, that's very powerful. Very, very powerful. Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, you have all the books in Gujarati. It's like, you know, you get a nuclear bomb, then you have to have a missile to deliver it also, right? So the missile is our devotees, they have to go out and do it. Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.